Hello. From the LA Times studios, you're listening to The Real at the intersection of entertainment and culture. I'm Mark Olson. I write about the movies for the Los Angeles Times. And, you know, as we've been starting out launching this podcast, we've been trying to figure out what we want it to be. And I think one of the things that we've kind of come upon is that we'd like for this program to sort of represent the conversations that we as entertainment writers at the Los Angeles Times have amongst ourselves in the newsroom, the way that we talk about culture and entertainment to ourselves. And I think over the last couple of weeks that certainly we've been watching and thinking and writing and talking a lot about Roseanne, the reboot of the television show, and also the sort of character of Roseanne Conner and the persona of person of Roseanne Barr. And so now to sort of get us into talking about the show, I'm joined here by three of my colleagues from the television desk. Introduce yourselves.
I'm Lorraine Ollie, television critic.
Yvonne Villarreal, TV reporter.
Greg Braxton, acting TV editor.
Lorraine, you wrote the review of the new show for the paper, and so maybe as a way to get us into the conversation, I wanted to ask, in essence, why remake this show, but also why now? If this feels like this is kind of the show of the moment, why do you think that it's turned out that this was really the moment for this show?
It's so funny because when I heard that it was coming back, my exact, you know, reaction was, why? Once I saw it, I was like, of course, because it makes so much sense now in the Trump era, also in an era when you're talking about the middle and working class arguably sliding farther than they were, you know, when Roseanne was around the first time. So in coming back this second time, you have the same cast. They're grappling with modern day issues. And in doing that, they're kind of talking to all of us about what we're all grappling with. They've got grandkids in there who are gender fluid. They're dealing with the high cost of health care. They're dealing with unemployment. A bunch of the families are living under the same roof now because they're broke. And who isn't right now, right? So I think on that front, it's really touched a nerve. And in some ways, I would say this show is dealing with both sides of that in a more provocative way than kind of anything we're seeing on TV right now.
And Greg, you actually interviewed Roseanne Barr for the new show, and you, in fact, have kind of a history with her. I mean, you wrote about the show in its original incarnation. You talked to her then. Tell me a little bit about your recent interview with her. And in your mind, is the new show distinctly different from the old show, or is this really just a continuation of what she was doing back in the 90s?
I believe it's a continuation. She's addressing the issues of the time, but she always addressed the issues of the time. I think what's changed now is the world. The show hasn't changed. It's the world that has changed. And this world is grappling with Roseanne, not only the show, but also the personality. Roseanne, the personality, has always been someone who's just very out there. Off stage, she has always been what I'd call a lightning rod, particularly during her marriage to Tom Arnold, their outrageous behavior, plus her own personal history, saying she was sexually abused by her husbands. And there was never a time when you could really, I think audiences then could separate the personality from the show, because the show, the comedy was so funny and the comedy was so rich and sharp. Right now, what we're dealing with in the world is Roseanne, the personality, who has social media to air some of her more provocative views, which a lot of people find extremely offensive. I don't feel that the show so far has gone into projecting those views so much. They've aired them, and I don't know if you felt this way too, Lorraine, but in a non-heavy-handed way. It hasn't been preachy about politics. They sort of touched on it, aired both sides, and then moved on to other things. I think Roseanne, in interviewing with her, I think she's brilliant. She's also very thoughtful, but there are always other things going on with her, which I think she reacts to, which prompts reactions from other people, and then the game is on. And I think that's what's happening now in the critical world, where so many people are just kind of jumping on this and reacting viscerally and perhaps maybe a little too quickly to her as a personality.
Part of the reason everybody's talking about the show is because it's been a big rating success in a way that few network shows are right now, kind of right out of the box like this. Is the reason for that success because this show is appealing to viewers in Tulsa and Topeka who feel like they've been left out when they're watching the Modern Family of Modern Family? Or is it part of this kind of larger wave of like nostalgia television and reboot television? Like, why do you think the show has been the rating success that it's been?
I think it's all of that. I don't think it's one or the other. And I think part of it, too, is just curiosity. Like, even if you didn't watch in the beginning, you're probably curious, like, what is this going to be about? I think a lot of people are sort of in the aftermath, because it did pull in, like, crazy numbers, 18.2 for its premiere. And then, you know, that rose to, like, 25 million over, like, 7 days, which is, like, unheard of in today's era. Like, that's why networks are sort of wooed by this idea of reboots, because in this sort of fragmented era of, you know, so many TV shows, it's hard to really break through the clutter. So if you have an established show that is going to bring people in, why not?
I mean, this is being broadcast on ABC. There's, you know, millions of dollars behind this. There's a whole corporate structure that's pushing the show into the world. And so when we're watching this show, what are we watching and what are we supporting? And I think that's especially given where Roseanne the person has kind of gone culturally and politically. So when someone watches this show, what is the act they are engaging in? Like, am I underwriting a conspiracy theorist if I'm watching the show?
But it's also like in the aftermath, all this stuff started surfacing with her, like this photo of her as dressed as a Nazi, the baking sheet of cookies right out of the oven. It's kind of like, whoa.
Yeah, but, you know, it's interesting. When I watch The Sopranos or, you know, when I'm watching Smilf, no one's asking me, like, what are you supporting there? What are you underwriting? Misogyny? Bad mothering? No, I'm watching a really great show and there's things in it that are they great for society? No, but it's entertainment. It's just think about everything, every piece of music you've listened to. I think it's coming down to this. And in a certain way, I think Roseanne has played it beautifully. How do you get attention right now when everything is about getting attention? She's managed to do it again. And here we are talking about her.
What is now the maybe the most notorious joke in the new show, Roseanne and her husband, they fall asleep, they wake up, they realize they slept through prime time, and they make this joke that, without saying them by name, runs down both Blackish and Fresh Off the Boat, two of the sort of marquee shows of the current ABC lineup. When that joke appears in an episode of Roseanne, what do you think both Roseanne the person and the writers and the people making that show, like, what's the joke they're making? Like, are they specifically attacking those other shows? Are they simply sort of acknowledging the cultural atmosphere they're existing in? Like, what is that joke about?
I think it's both. They are the family that might actually be asking those questions or making jokes about that. Like, that family looks nothing like us. But then you also have to step outside and look at the show itself, what they did to sort of diversify. So they put in the gender-fluid grandkid. They put in the black daughter DJ. You know, so it's not the super white show that it was before, but it's still like the parents, you know, Roseanne represents kind of like the old school idea of, you know, well, this is like what I understand as a family, the white family. And so they brought in these other elements to try and tip it the other way. So I think they're trying to play both sides in that sense. I don't know, but you have to also think, and this is probably going to get me in trouble, but there hasn't been a lot of shows lately that have represented what people like to call the disenfranchised white middle class during the Trump election. Now, so you can argue, and I did at the time, of saying that was the disenfranchised. Oh, please, like, you can't be the franchise and call yourself different franchise. But this is one of the few shows now that actually speaks to that part of America. And what else does right now?
Well, it's the part that we sort of came to realize that Hollywood at least had overlooked, right? Like, what did we miss? Even newsrooms, we grappled with, where are we not really like telling stories?
I write about the movies. I'm aware of this thing called television. I'm maybe not as steeped in it
as you
guys are. So I looked at the top 10 ratings for television, and it is NCIS's some show called Bull. These programs, who are they for if not this, quote, disenfranchised, you know, white middle America? And so I'm curious, like, what were those people not getting from their television up until now that they feel like somehow they're getting from this, you know, idea of Roseanne and what Roseanne the show represents as being, you know, the real America?
I think it's a couple different things. Number one, about niche audiences. Okay, we've all talked about it's a success of a show right now. You're really talking about like how it's hit a niche audience. Okay, so when you're pulling back a reboot like Roseanne, like Will and Grace, it's going to hit a much wider swath. So I think that's the number one thing. And I think the idea that we don't have to appeal to as many people has kind of been driving television, maybe, I don't know, I would say for the last 5 years, 10 years, you know, as we've gotten more and more platforms, you don't have to appeal to as many people. Then all of a sudden, it's like, wait a minute, here's something that does. And it's like, oh, our show is back. This isn't the one about the Asian family. This isn't the one about whatever it is, gay characters. So I don't know. Is it wrong? Is it right? But it's working.
Recently, the LA Times, we hosted some of our Emmy roundtables. And I know we had Winnie Cummings, who's involved in the show, Sarah Gilbert, who's involved in the show, were on those roundtables with Lorraine and Yvonne that you moderated. And now, what was your impression of the way they feel about the show? In some ways, I'm wondering the extent to which they kind of like wheeled out Roseanne Barr and were like, here you go, America. Especially with Sarah Gilbert, that I know she's kind of been talked about a lot as someone who is a real motivator of this, the reboot, especially considering her position, you know, what her career is now. I'm interested in like what some of these like younger talents who are involved in this reboot, like what their sort of like thinking behind it is.
Well, Whitney, like shocking when you hear that she's part of this. She's a co-showrunner along with Bruce Helford. And from her perspective, she was sort of saying, you know, she had come to the realization that she had been in this sort of echo chamber. She was just hearing all the thoughts that were similar to hers. And, you know, she wasn't really getting an understanding of maybe what some of the Trump supporters were feeling or why they were voting this way, what they were unhappy about. And so that was sort of her motivator of being part of this show. Like, she really wanted to sort of come to an understanding, not just write them off. That was her motivator. I don't know about Sarah.
With Sarah, we didn't talk as much about that because, you know, she talked about the first time around, she was really young. And, you know, she said, I just came into it as, you know, being young and okay. This time around, I think she said she didn't really think about it so much as a phenomenon. She just kind of wanted to bring it back because she thought the time was right. But I just wanted to get back to that echo chamber thing that you were saying. It's interesting because, you know, while we're talking about Roseanne, we're talking about it like, you know, well, look, you know, television entertainment, you know, being pulled in a lefty, more, you know, progressive. We'll flip this around. Okay, so if you are a Trump supporter or conservative and you've been watching shows that are the more traditional, whatever, procedurals, police things that don't, when you watch Roseanne, you're also getting another viewpoint that you're not getting from those other shows you're watching. You're getting Jackie bringing in that whole progressive side. And it's annoying. It's super PC. And then you're getting, you know, Darlene
but
in
now,
the middle.
Now, to be fair, though, I feel like Jackie, they sort of threw her under the bus by having her go, not by being a Hillary supporter who was somehow convinced to vote for Jill Stein. That's like a step too far.
No, because, okay, she may be a step on one side, but then you have like Darlene in the middle, mm-hmm. right? And you have her kids in the middle. So you've got everybody represented there. And I feel like in this era of tribalism, when you like go to what you know you want to hear on TV, Roseanne's kind of got everything in it for everybody. So, you know, you can talk about the PC as getting the darts thrown at him, but then flip this around and going, okay, well, people who watch Fox News, if they're watching this, they're getting the other side as well.
It's like being at a family dinner.
Yes, holidays. I find it really funny that, you know, there are conversations about, should I be watching Roseanne? Should I not? I just think, you know, buck the hell up. Like, what have you been watching? Have you just been sitting in your own little world of, you know, I'm only going to watch this thing that complements exactly what I think? I mean, maybe, and this may sound ridiculous, Roseanne from the past is the show of the future. Like, maybe this is just what we need.
But plus, don't you want to be educated on what the other side
yes.
thinks? I mean, isn't that part of being a human being in today's world that you have to know what the other side is thinking, and that informs your own opinion and maybe will teach you something, at least some understanding.
Right. I agree.
Roseanne's vision of the scare quotes italicized real America and the vision of American life that you see from One Day at a Time, they just seem like they're sort of like they're dealing with a lot of the same issues, but they're coming at them from very different angles.
I don't actually see them that far apart. I just see, if you're talking about One Day at a Time, it's coming from a family who's not white. I mean, I came from an immigrant family, and we dealt with the same issues as our neighbors and the other neighbors down the street who were something different from us. It's funny how we're viewing this, like, well, maybe that's different, but it's actually not. But we're coming to a place where there's so much stuff out there, it's all starting to converge because everyone's dealing with the same issues. So maybe this is what needed to happen. Maybe it needed to nicheify, and then everybody's putting their stories out there, and oh my gosh, wait a minute, these are a lot of the same stories, and they're dovetailing.
They're universal issues.
Well, they're putting like their sort of
filter
through it, like dealing with when Elena, the daughter, comes out as gay. You know, the family grapples with it, and it's like you're getting the sort of Latino sort of perspective on that because it is such a taboo thing to come out as gay in the Latino community. And so you get it through that perspective of them sort of not coming to terms with it, but like realizing this is okay. Like everything's fine. Nothing changes.
But are these shows being watched by the same audiences? Or if in fact audiences now are very fragmented and sort of niched, do One Day at a Time viewers realize that Roseanne is kind of dealing with some of the same stuff? Or do Roseanne viewers realize that something like One Day at a Time or SMILF is also out there? Like, are these shows being watched by totally different audiences?
I think there's some overlap. I don't know if it's totally the same, but I think there is some overlap.
Thinking about the show moving forward, especially getting into like the Emmy space, the original show had a somewhat contentious relationship with the Emmys, the sort of op-ed cultural cachet that the television program known as Roseanne now has. I don't know if the Emmy Academy, if there's sort of a new Emmy Academy in the way that there is with the Oscars and the Motion Picture Academy. Can the new show do well at the Emmys?
That's going to be a very interesting question. I think just based on the quality of the show, it's definitely in the running for comedy series, just with a few episodes. And I think it's because of this other conversation that's surrounding it. Is that going to impact? I don't know. But in just a few weeks, it has put itself in a pole position for marquee Emmy consideration. And how all this other conversation is going to impact it is going to be a fascinating thing to watch.
And so that's, I think, where we're going to wrap this up for this half of our conversation. We're going to be back in just a few moments to talk about the sort of the response to have our take on the takes to the new Roseanne. And so we're back, and this will be the second half of our episode on the new Roseanne reboot. And now we're going to try to talk a little bit, kind of a hot take on the hot takes, a little bit about the sort of the response to the show and what it maybe has become now that it's made this leap from the culture pages onto the op-ed pages. And joining me now, we have here
Mary McNamara, assistant managing editor, Arts and Entertainment, and former television critic.
Robert Lloyd, current television critic.
Robert, I'm going to start with something for you. You had a really smart piece that ran in the paper recently after the show has started to roll out. And considering the show has been so polarizing, you, I think, in some ways took the somewhat radical position of essentially a moderate middle ground. And for you, the Connors are only the Connors, meaning that the family on the show is meant to represent the family on the show, and maybe not all of America in the way that people think it is.
Right.
And can you talk a little bit about kind of that idea? Like, why do you think this show has suddenly become such a bigger thing than just a show on the TV?
Well, why it's become a bigger thing is because everything becomes a big thing now. We live in a different world than when the first time Roseanne came out, and maybe you had some op-eds here or gnashing of teeth, but now everybody is gnashing their teeth in public, and everybody needs to have an opinion on something. And the fact that Roseanne Barr is very out there in the world, spouting some things that I could call nonsense easily, but she doesn't see it that way, and that she was a self-proclaimed Trump voter and that her character is a Trump voter. That's just, you know, there are no other self-proclaimed Trump voters who aren't being held up as a kind of a joke. That's part of why I think there's just, we live in this, as I said in the piece, these are performative times. We're part of it. I mean, the paper is part of it. What ideas do we have? And this is hot. And what's our take? And what's our other take? And what's our take on the take? And so there's this kind of amplification of the amplification of the amplification that makes things seem crazy. I mean, Patricia Heaton, who is the star of The Middle, which is the closest thing to Roseanne on television, and I think in some ways actually an homage to the show. She's a conservative, and that comes out here and there, but I don't think anybody thinks about that when they watch The Middle. The other thing is that as far as the Conners being the Conners and the show not being about Roseanne Barr's political beliefs is that there's a fundamental lack of knowledge or misunderstanding about how television shows are made. They're not the voice of one person. It's not a YouTube vlog in which somebody gets on and spouts their own opinions for however long they want to be on. This is a collaborative effort that is written by a bunch of people. It's produced by people, and Roseanne is not a showrunner. Sarah Gilbert is the person who got this going, and she's a liberal, if you look at her, who she follows on Twitter. But she's definitely not, you know. So, and if you look at the show itself, there's a people argue on that show. It's not like, hey, we all think the same thing. So, in order to be good, it has to be varied. What it does is it just makes that show very particularly about those characters, and that's why I think people are tuning in. Some people want to see, oh, she likes Trump, but they'll be disappointed if they think that's all they're getting.
Now, Mary, why do you think with this show in particular, or what is it about Roseanne Barr, the sort of personality and persona, that people seem to have a specifically difficult time in separating Roseanne Conner, the character on this television program, from Roseanne Barr, this person who exists in the world?
Well, I mean, Roseanne has always been a provocative figure. I mean, that is the kind of comedian she was. That's the kind of stand-up comedian she was. She was very in your face. She was very, she took on like a lot of sacred cows. She was like, seemed like a feminist, but she never said she was a feminist, but she was very, she's, you know, loud and at times abrasive, at times, you know, she could be very charming. She could be very funny, but she just was very unpredictable. And when the show started, I mean, what I find kind of hilarious about this is like when the show started, conservatives were very concerned about her because
the original show,
because she swore she was certainly not a June Cleaver or anything like kind of mother. And I mean, even you, I agree that The Middle is like sort of, if not an homage to the original show, then at least a continuation of that. But the Patricia Heaton character is a model mother compared to what Roseanne was, because she just didn't care and she would yell at people and like sort of reveled in the fact that she didn't try. Or anyway, so people found that, some people found that very offensive. Other people found it very liberating, which is like, here's a mom. She's struggling. They're trying to get money. They're, you know, things are unfair. She's pointing out what's unfair. She's yelling at her kids just like we all do. So now it's kind of come full circle, which so now the liberals are all upset. And I think one of the big issues that's different too is that, and as Robert pointed out in his piece, everything is a big deal because it comes with a whole platform, planned or unplanned, of, you know, social media, of the star's Twitter feed. And Roseanne is crazy on social media. And she's crazy in general. I mean, if you saw her Roseanne is Nuts reality show, I mean, she ran for president in 2012. I think she ran for president the last time around, or at least she said she was. That's why I think when she was asked early on if she supported Trump, she was like, no, she was voting for herself. So that's like sort of the resting point of Roseanne. So you have this show, and then you have like this ongoing subtext in real time of her Twitter feed. And so people are, I mean, obviously the Trump administration has, because of his use of Twitter, I mean, all the rules of whatever the rules were of social engagement on social media are just blasted away. And when you have then Trump supporting or tweeting after the show premiered, congratulations, you've done a show about us. I mean, I think that's when everybody like sort of flipped out and like, what us are you talking about? And they sort of saw Roseanne as catering to that. The one thing that disappointed me in all of this, you know, with the presidential tweet is when he said, you know, this is a show about us, is that the old Roseanne would have called him on that bullshit. She would have said, what do you mean us? Like, you know, you're a millionaire, billionaire, whatever you're saying you are. This show is not about you. And that she didn't do that, that kind of disappointed me. she's not us anymore either. When she started Roseanne, she was a struggling stand-up comedian who had some success, and then she became like this incredible powerhouse influencer, rich, you know. And I remember that there was a very funny moment in her reality show when she was railing against Hollywood in Los Angeles, and her son said, "Mom, you're surrounded by cameras," you know, and it's like sort of, oh yeah, now the show isn't about her either.
Well, does the show Roseanne, or even the person of Roseanne, really have a political point of view, or are both of them essentially interested only in kind of provocation for the sake of provocation?
You know, since she does not have a consistent and easily identifiable political persona, I'd not risk a guess at that. I mean, the show seems like a very modern situation comedy. But one of the things that I find, two things I find interesting, and one is like this idea which Robert brought up in his piece, which is that things are so charged now that even a television show, it's like, I'm going to watch it or I'm not going to watch it because of these things. I mean, that's something that television, it took a lot for people to go, I'm not watching this show because of this moral or political or ethical, whatever. Now we do that a lot. So you have this show come back and you realize how dangerous nostalgia is, because now the star and the mover, even though obviously she was not the mover and the shaker behind the reboot, but she is still very much the creator of the show and the center of the show. She is something, or being perceived as something, very different than she was in the beginning, which I think is kind of interesting. And it also makes us question the actions and the politics of the artist. How much is that supposed to impact how we feel about the art? People like it and people are watching it, so I don't think that this is going to derail the show. But I do think, you know, when you see all the op-eds about, you know, I like the show, but I'm not going to watch it, or I'm boycotting the show, legitimate. People are allowed to watch what they want. Also, the people that are saying that tend to be liberal. Many of them are women. There's no getting away from the fact that however you feel about Roseanne Barr right now, Roseanne Barr changed the game for women in television. I mean, she absolutely did. She created an unlikable character, unlikable through the definition of the times, and made it one of the, you know, most successful characters on television ever.
But was it the core idea and selling point of the original show, and in some ways this is what's transferred to the new show, is that it was going to be kind of raw and like a real presentation of a real family in a way that most sitcoms weren't? If we're in these sort of like rough and ready times, like, does the new show have to get more raw in some way and to sort of continue that lineage?
Like, the new show is not significantly a departure from the old show, because what the old show was doing was real. On many levels, you just keep it real and you're still real.
The pilot, especially, as which was, you know, you have to set up all of these, introduce the characters and set up all these tensions. But the idea of like Jackie and Roseanne, you know, having not spoken since the election, I mean, that's true in a lot of families. I mean, that I remember, and we did stories on it, people going home for Thanksgiving or Christmas, not knowing how they were going to even talk to the people that they believed had voted in a way that was outrageous, either on both sides. How could you? So, I mean, that's totally real. I think one of the criticisms of the pilot, not so much the second episode, that it was like sort of checking a laundry list of political hot button topics. But if that's the worst criticism you can, you know, aim at a pilot of a sitcom, well, that's what pilots do. I mean, they sort of like, here are the things that we're going to not be afraid to address all in a list. And then we move into what will become the actual show. And what has become the actual show seems less overtly box checking and more driven by character, more driven by like sort of the normal plot points that drive family sitcoms. But it's the Connors.
Okay, how out of control do you think this show is, in the sense of the way it's being received is not what the creators intended or what ABC intended? I think, Mary, you're very correct. The moment that the president of the United States said, this show is about us, this show is sort of for us, that seems to have launched it into this whole other atmosphere.
I think, you know, we are really also at a point where, you know, there's, as long as they spell your name right, there's no bad publicity. I mean, there's that. If you look at ABC, ABC is also the home of Scandal, which sort of invented the idea of every episode of every show, how you sort of build towards the tweet-worthy moment. There's that, you know, the idea that to be controversial now, you get 9 million think pieces on the 87 zillion platforms there are now, and they're all about your show, and they're reaching people who maybe haven't seen the show, who may go like, well, I need to see and judge for myself. So it's not a bad thing. So your show is in constant conversation. Here we are. We're doing a podcast about it. So on top of the anticipation of a beloved show coming back and seeing that Dan didn't die, and here's Laurie Metcalf, who's won like every award, coming back to Roseanne. It's like, on top of all that, you get to have like this cool political conversation, which I think unfortunately has become part of like the publicity plan.
I think that the times that we're in possibly made it an easier sell when Sarah Gilbert started pushing to get the show going on, and she went to Roseanne and asked her, and basically John Goodman having said yes was the key moment for her. But I believe that Roseanne had tried to get sort of Roseanne off the ground again over time. Because we're in this moment, and because Roseanne Barr is in it, because the white working class, which some people think the Conners stand for, but again, I think they're just one family in something that you don't want to reduce to millions of people to a single idea, made it something that ABC executives could look at more positively. And also we're in a time when reboots, of course, are doing well, and they could look at Will and Grace and go, well, that's not bad for a comedy. I don't know if they thought they'd get more than the 10 million that Will and Grace got, though. I think 18 million rising to 23 million must have been a surprise.
Well, I mean, I think there is a legitimate criticism that television as a whole does not deal with class very well. It doesn't deal with people who are not living usually much better than their professions would indicate. But, so I think that there is a reaction to that. And there was a lot of soul searching. There was soul searching at this newspaper about, like, you know, where did this rage come from? This what is being portrayed now as white working class rage, even though if you actually look at the demographics of the people who voted for Trump in the election, it doesn't break down that way. But that was the narrative that came out immediately after the election. And I think it is a legitimate criticism of television. We do see a lot of upper middle class professional people who very rarely actually work. And so, you know, I think it is a smart time for it to come back. And I think it was a safe bet. So you also have the nostalgia factor built in, but it's not the family from Shameless. It's a family you would know.
And now the second season that they've already ordered, that very easily could end up going to air on some timeline where it's essentially a fall show right around the upcoming elections. Do you live in fear of what like an election season series of Roseanne would look like?
I just live in fear. The Roseanne is just incidental to that.
Yeah, I don't live it. If it gets too in the weeds with politics, people will stop watching it because nobody wants to watch ongoing political conversation. It has to be about the family. It has to be about the characters. There has to be, you know, growth. There has to be something beyond that.
I mean, really, that's what this season is about. It's about the human stories that these characters are involved in. I mean, they don't have a long time to develop these arcs. But there are arcs. Becky is having a surrogate mother for a child, and Darlene is dealing with her own daughter's desire to get out of Lanford and back to Chicago. What's important about this show or any show is that it be funny. This has a great staff. You know, Wanda Sykes is on staff, and Norm Macdonald and Whitney Cumming. And I mean, it's a lot of great people working on this show.
That's the other thing. I mean, Roseanne was and continues to be a big champion of women writers, of women directors. But at the end of the day, it's like, as Robert said, it's like, is the show funny? Do people care about the characters? Are these people you want to invite into your home? I mean, it's the rules of television.
Well, that seems like a good place for us to wrap up this conversation on Roseanne and the takes on the takes. I have this strange feeling that we will find ourselves talking about this program more, perhaps either later in this season or certainly again once the second season rolls around. So I'm sure there'll be much more Roseanne content coming to you. For the Los Angeles Times Studios and The Real, I'm Mark Olson. Thanks for listening.